Welcome to Gnostic Insights. My name is Dr. Sid Ropp, and I'm your host. Today we have a very special episode with a Gnostic friend of mine named Adrian Smith, and he has a fantastic book that I so much enjoyed reading and I highly recommend, and this is what we are going to discuss today. And his book is called A Prison for the Mind, Reflections of a Disappointed Fundamentalist. And Adrian is going to share with us his journey out of fundamentalism and what that means, and what Gnosticism has to do with all of this. After Adrian's portion of the interview, I'm going to spend about 10 minutes at the end of this episode discussing the interview and what Adrian shared with us in terms of the Gnostic insights, concepts, and definitions that we're familiar with by now. So stay tuned for that. Welcome, Adrian. I'm so glad to have you here on Gnostic Insights.
Good morning, Sid. Thank you very much for your introduction, and I'm really looking forward to talking to you about fundamentalism, fractals, Gnosticism, and anything else that comes up.
This sort of thing is my bread and butter. I love talking about Gnosticism, so it's so good to have someone to talk to about this sort of thing. How about we start with a brief biography of yourself?
Okay, well, I'll start from my introduction to fundamentalism, which goes back to my teenage years. I was 14 years old and I got indoctrinated into a fundamentalist church, a rather extreme one. It came through listening to television and radio broadcasts from a very charismatic religious leader and a glossy periodical magazine, which wasn't religious at first. It kind of eased its way into that. So I was indoctrinated into the church and eventually went to their liberal arts college in England, graduated with a Bachelor of Arts degree with a major in theology. Mm-hmm. After my graduation, I was offered a position as a minister in that church. I accepted it. I lasted for about 3 years, but because of a series of doctrinal conflicts, eventually I was dismissed from my job. And when I refused not to talk about my ideas to members of the congregation, they also excommunicated me from the church. And following that, I went to work for a series of corporations. And in the course of my career, I began to notice recurring patterns or a sense of déjà vu. Mm-hmm. I started to feel like I was experiencing the same thing, only in different contexts. And that's what inspired me to write the book, because as my ideas developed, I began to see that different things are also fundamentalist. In my book, I talk about the fundamentalism of science, where materialistic scientists can become like priests to people, with fundamentalism in politics, in the political divide, in economics, Marxism, capitalism. And finally, I think the mother of all cults is the woke movement. And never did in my wildest dreams could I see perfectly reproduced in a civilization-wide phenomenon that is so pervasive now and is dominating our institutions.
I just wanted to know, what do you mean by fundamentalism?
Okay, that's a good question. And in the context of my book, I would describe fundamentalism in different ways. I see it as an empty vessel, the letter of the law rather than the spirit of the law, mm-hmm. or in New Testament terms, having a form of religion but denying the power thereof, mm-hmm. the form rather than content. So I'm not really talking about your average churchgoer or even the average churchgoer of the church that I belong to, because I don't think that even though if you take a literalistic approach to the Bible, it doesn't mean that you don't have also content or spiritual experience. Mm-hmm. What I'm talking about really, or what I'm warning against really, is the extreme version of it. Extreme letter of the law, extreme ideological possession almost, and the characteristics of it. And I do describe various characteristics of it. But you can see it perfectly expressed in the conflict between Jesus Christ and the Pharisees. The Pharisees being those that tithed mint, anise, and cumin, but ignored the weightier matters of the law. Justice, mercy, and faith. So rarely do you find people in your average church that have ignored the weightier matters of the law completely. It's always a continuum, moderate to extreme. You have your Pharisees and you have your Puritans, the Salem witch trials, the Jacobins of the French Revolution, the Bolsheviks of the Russian Revolution. And I would say finally now we have woke as an extreme version of it, a civilization destroyer, in my opinion. And I guess you could describe fundamentalism in contrast to Gnosticism, where there was no real set of doctrines to sign up for. About the direction of travel, looking for your answers in the outer world and to authority figures for your answers, rather than doing a mystical or shamanistic search within for your own answers. I use the Wizard of Oz as a metaphor for what happened to me. Us college students marching off to the college looking for our answers, and Dorothy and her companions off to see the wizard to find their answers from some blustering authority figure, but only to find out that the authority figure behind the screen was rather an ordinary person. And I actually found that to be the case with the wizard of my experience, the religious leader, that he turned out actually to be rather weak. And rather influenced himself. And if you explore the analogies of the Wizard of Oz, Frank Baum was a theosophist. He was also part of a monetary reform movement. So there's deep symbolism at different levels in that story. And one of the comparisons would be that the wizard actually represent the president of the United States of the time, who was being manipulated by the Wicked Witch of the East and the Wicked Witch of the West, which in the symbolism which he used was Rockefeller and Morgan. So he was basically a manipulated figure. And I found this to be very true of the religious leader that I was involved with, who I call the wizard.
Who was your wizard being influenced by?
Well, at first, he was very heavily influenced by his wife, who was actually the moral force behind it. But when she died, he immediately became under the influence of a very clever lawyer and accountant who was really taking advantage, I think, of him and pulling the strings. And I think this is when things really started to go wrong, where the content, the actual content that I refer to, the moral content of it, started to fall apart. And I remember a dissident minister who also left sent me a recording of a conversation that he had had with the wizard, in which the wizard was sort of crying and whimpering about how he was being yelled at and pushed around by this lawyer accountant. But it did so remind me of the little man behind the screen. Well, if you pulled him aside and got him from behind the screen, you know, he's quite an ordinary chap, you know, that you can have a conversation with. So that's sort of my idea about fundamentalism. It's about obedience, perhaps, being obedient to some authority figure outside of yourself, the form rather than the content.
And why are people obedient like that? Is the expectation that the person they are following is wiser, knows more? Is that what it is?
Well, it's going back to the Wizard of Oz. Dorothy and her companions just felt inadequate. They just felt like, I don't have a brain, or I don't have courage, or they just felt
or a college degree.
Exactly. Yes, totally. Yeah. Comes from a sense of inadequacy, of not knowing who we really are, of being out of touch with our true identity, the divinity within. And the direction of travel is therefore always outward and not inward.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of why people are not that way is because they're getting constantly bombarded with messaging that encourages their subservience and their weakness. And part of the brainwashing process is to only include that information that is supportive of a false narrative and exclude and throw away everything else.
Mm-hmm.
And we see that very clearly being exercised by all fundamentalist ideologies.
Mm-hmm.
Oftentimes through the media that they control, so that only those news stories that are relevant to the narrative make it.
Mm-hmm.
Those that are opposed to it are nixed. So people are being constantly indoctrinated not to think well of themselves or not to value their own opinions, but they're always switching on the TV to find out what they should believe that day, you know, or what's mm-hmm. important for them to know that day.
Mm-hmm.
I guess a lot of it has to do with continuous bombardment with the same kind of message that was being delivered to us students at the Wizards College. We were told, you know, don't listen to anyone who criticizes. Don't listen to anyone who has an opposing perspective. And that's mm-hmm. why people are not instinctually going within. You'll see this more with Native peoples, perhaps, that they have a more shamanistic approach to their world than we do.
Mm-hmm.
Not always, but many times.
You mentioned a mystical experience you had. Did that contribute to your leaving the church, or was that a later experience?
No, this was much later. When I left the church, it wasn't one and done.
Mm.
I thought it was, but I found there were repeating patterns, as we'll talk about again. The mystical experience I had was much later. It's very difficult to describe a mystical experience.
Mm-hmm.
You can only just sort of approach it. But perhaps by setting the stage, I find that if you do something like a pilgrimage or something of that nature, where you are setting an intention to receive information from your higher self or from your subconscious, this sets the stage. And one of the things we were doing at that time was exploring sacred sites of the West, one of which was Crater Lake near where you are, I think.
Yeah,
which
right.
I just found an absolutely beautiful place and very mystical place.
Uh-huh.
So doing something like a pilgrimage, setting your intention, going to a beautiful place in nature that inspires, gets you out of that robot mind of routine day after day. And so I was feeling very much out of my routine at that time. And it happened late in the evening, right out of the blue. I just had this overwhelming sense of well-being, which was highly unusual for me because I suffer a lot from anxiety and depressive episodes. And this was just very overpowering. All I can say about it is it was completely devoid of any intellectual content. It was pure experiential. So in that sense, it's really difficult to describe it. But one of the things that helped me find some words for it was your book, A Simple Explanation.
Oh, is that right?
Where you talk about individual units of consciousness nested in a sea of universal consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
I think that that describes probably about as well as anything could, my experience, that I felt like there was nothing that I could do to escape this identity,
mm-hmm.
even if I wanted to.
Mm.
Or it didn't really depend on my state of consciousness at the time. If I was aware of it or not aware of it, it didn't make any difference. It was always the reality. So it was like having a little brush with ultimate reality. It was not something that has stayed with me permanently,
mm-hmm.
but it is something that I will
always remember. Exactly.
I will always remember it. A verse in Psalms also maybe comes close where it says, whither shall I flee from thy spirit? If I ascend up to heaven, you're there. And if I descend into hell, you are there. And it was kind of like when it was coming to me during the experience, it didn't depend on my state of mind. The reality of a situation does not depend on your state of mind. And what came to me during the experience was also that the reasons for my anxieties and depressions were false narratives
mm-hmm.
that I told myself, stories, sad stories
mm-hmm.
that I believed were absolutely true at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And here again, this was like an internal form of fundamentalism, because when you're telling yourself these sad stories, you include only that information which supports the sad story,
right,
and you throw away everything else.
Right.
And there's even a book been written about this, one that I included in the bibliography, Feeling Good, the New Mood Therapy, about a different kind of therapy which helps people to unravel their false narratives.
Right. And the simple explanation, I call those narratives memes.
Yes.
That's what I call your meme bundle. You're carrying it around like a big sack of sticks on your back.
Oh, so true. So true. You're carrying around a bunch of false stories that you believe with absolute conviction are the absolute truth.
And did this mystical experience of being, I guess, embraced in the arms of the greater consciousness, I guess mm-hmm. we could call it that. Did it feel like love, by the way? Or was
Oh, totally.
Simple?
Yes, totally.
Okay. So yeah. did it cause you to be able to stop listening to those negative memes?
While the experience was happening, absolutely. Afterwards, not so much, but at least you can, when you feel yourself slipping into those memes, you can catch yourself. You can be the observer in the situation. Okay, this is happening to me again. I'm starting to believe the nonsense. Let's look at some other alternative ways of seeing this situation, see if they're more plausible. So you can sort of coach your way out of it. And that's exactly what happens in a fundamentalist ideology. You've got to listen to alternatives. And it's precisely the censorship that they impose that prevents you from looking at these alternatives. And that's the way out of it.
Right. Right. So an open mind is essential to peace and joy. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. An open mind, indeed, and not being locked into anything, but to consider. And I think this is something about Gnosticism, where the Gnostics were very open people, in my judgment, that they would sit around and discuss their own visions and ideas and beliefs and revelations in an atmosphere of respect. And many times they had different opinions, but they were very tolerant. But hearing different opinions, points of view, is so essential, and it's just not what we're getting.
The censorship is what I would call a fractal, because it occurs everywhere, and it's always the same exact mechanism. It's the mechanism of shutting down alternative points of view so that only the narrative that they want you to have can stand. You know, I'd say people who are not aware of these dynamics that are occurring in society, they don't realize that their news, that their normal evening news, is a form of censorship and very carefully packaged, narrative. They don't realize that. But it's really interesting how in social media, with Twitter and YouTube and Facebook, how they are open. They're not even pretending anymore. They are openly censoring people.
Right. It's becoming explicit. That's right.
Yes.
And going back to the fractal idea, I do use the fractal analogy in my book. And when I read your book and you were using the fractal analogy, then it started coming together again. A fractal being like a head of broccoli. If you pick a tiny little piece of the head of broccoli, it's going to be the same thing, essentially, but a different configuration. So you see the fractal thing working through fundamentalism as a fundamentalist religion, fundamentalist Christianity, fundamentalist science, fundamentalist politics, and extremist ideologies and belief systems of all different kinds, all having the essentially the same characteristics, but with a different wrapper. And people get too focused on the wrapper and not the content. And that's why, after an experience like mine, it is very, very easy to fall into the same thing, to fall into another trap if you have a recurring pattern in your life. Because you think it's one and done, you think it's over with, but you are fooled by the wrapper getting sucked into the same experience.
Right. So in other words, you're repeating the same experience over and over, but in different milieus. By wrapper, you mean a different setting.
That's right.
Right.
And
then
eventually you get wise to that too. So, but it takes about 10 years in my case.
Oh, so my degree's in rhetoric, which is the art of persuasive speech, and narratives, how to construct narratives. That's what I studied in graduate school. Yeah. And my job at the college and university level was to teach public speaking and debate. And by the time I left teaching college, it was about 10 years ago, I was being told by the dean not to allow certain topics. We can't talk about this. We can't talk about that. They didn't want my students who were in debate to be able to debate things.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah.
And that's at the university. So I know, there you go.
Oh, the universities. Oh, my. Right. Or why can't we have some ideas which are conservative, some ideas which are libertarian, some ideas which are socialist? I judge an idea on its merits. So the ideal human being, self-actualized, would be all over the place. It would be hard to put them into a category. They would defy being put into a category.
Well, now the wokesters that are out there right now, they think they are open-minded. They preach tolerance.
Yes. Well, this goes to one of the characteristics of fundamentalism. I call it the mask of piety.
Uh-huh.
They all do it. They all have to have a pious face. Constantine had to have Christianity as a pious face for the furtherance of empire and military conquest. And the globalists have to have a pious face for their globalist empire. And that face is woke. So they're going to be justice, social justice, equity, diversity and inclusion, sustainable development, anything that's going to make them look good. But you have to scratch beneath the surface, find out what they're really about.
Do you think these people realize that they're being hypocritical?
I think it depends on how high you go. I don't have a definitive answer there, but my suspicion is that the people at the very top are actually constructing this quite consciously, so they do know. Who is just a dupe in all this? I can't answer that. I don't know.
All right. Okay. Yeah.
But you can have your suspicions, you know.
It's maddening, and I must admit, maybe I should stop watching the news altogether, no matter whether it's news from the left or news from the right. Perhaps that is not where we are supposed to be operating at all as Gnostics.
Well, I'll tell you one thing about the news is I did go on a news fast for a couple of weeks, just out of necessity, because we were traveling in a remote place.
Mm-hmm.
When I got back to turn on the news, I found that I really hadn't missed all that much.
Yeah.
And that it really didn't take very long to get back up to speed about what's going on.
Right.
So what that tells me is that a good part of the news is not information, but repetition.
Oh, yeah.
So they're repeating the same old thing, and people are glued in a kind of mesmerized state, constantly rehearsing the same story over and over again. So my feeling is that you want to know what's going on, but you can find that out from books, from good quality documentaries, from respected investigative journalists. What's actually happening is pretty easy and quick to find out, and you don't need to sit there in front of that flickering screen for very long being mesmerized by it.
Yeah, literally mesmerized, right?
Yes.
Because it's a
yes.
form of indoctrination.
Yes, yes.
That's good. Well, what do you figure is the way out of fundamentalism?
At the top of the list, I would say what we've discussed already, listening to alternatives, as many alternatives. I do have a law degree, and law helps you here because there's no such thing as a one-handed lawyer. It's always on one hand this and on the other hand the other. So you're always learning to make your opponent's argument better than he can. Or if you hear a proposition or you hear something that sounds very, very convincing, you ask yourself, okay, well, what would the other side say about this? And then go and find out what the other side says about it. And that can sort of short circuit a lot of problems. And again, going back to the direction of travel, do your own internal practices, meditations, walks in nature, whatever works for you, Tai Chi, yoga, whatever puts you in touch with yourself and with your own connection with nature. And don't get too enamored with anybody. Any master or religious teacher worth his salt will not say, listen to me, you know.
Yeah.
That's just a warning sign. So I think those are the main things. Beware of utopian visions. When people are presenting you with a utopian vision, I think this is common to them all. I think it was true of the Pharisees. It was true of the church that I worked with. Their utopian vision was all these other churches are wrong and you need to be right. And if you're right and obedient, then all the world's problems will be solved.
Mm-hmm.
And all will be right with the world, and your life will be right. You won't have unhappy marriages and disobedient children and things going wrong for you. You'll be prosperous and life will be great.
Mm-hmm.
That's one utopian vision. Another utopian vision was perhaps the Marxist one, you know, get rid of the capitalists and everything's going to be great. That didn't work out so well. You'll always find that. You'll always find that within it. And now we're going to be faced with a new utopian vision that all we got to do is get rid of the nation state, national constitutions, loyalty to your country. All that's a thing of the past. It created a lot of wars. And now we're going to solve all that with globalist technocratic elites going to take charge of everything and produce a wonderful world tomorrow.
Now, you've just listened to the first half of my interview with Adrian Smith, and this will be continued next week with the second half of the interview. I hope you're enjoying this interview with Adrian Smith. We haven't spoken of many explicitly Gnostic concepts, so I'd like to drop a few concepts on you here at the end of this portion of the interview so we can catch an orientation of definitions that we've covered in the previous episodes. Most recently, we were discussing consciousness. Whence cometh consciousness? Where does consciousness come from? And I was talking about the difference between aeonic consciousness and archonic. And aeonic consciousness comes from the Pleroma of God. It comes from the eons above, and it is patterned after the mind of God. The archonic is patterned after the mind of the demiurge and the archons. It is after the fall, and so stands in direct opposition to the aeonic consciousness, because one is pre-fall and one is after the fall, and it is therefore the shadow of the aeonic consciousness. And if you go back to these previous two episodes on consciousness, you will see that the robot type of mind is archonic. It's from the demiurge. It is not a godly state of mind, you might say. It is a state of mind that depends upon coercion, indoctrination, tight controls like the strings on a puppet. And when Adrian speaks of fundamentalism and the structure of fundamentalism, I am reminded of this archonic type of viral consciousness, enslaved robotic consciousness, not consciousness as we think of it from the aeonic sense. They do not have a self-aware center. The archons are completely controlled like puppets by the demiurge. And this is how they exert control over those who come under their sway. Where freedom of thought or having an open mind is not valued, but rather uniformity of thought. Whatever that thought is, it's the uniformity and the inability to examine other points of view. That in itself is a very archonic way of going about consciousness. I was also reminded of the father's consciousness when Adrian was speaking earlier in the episode about his mystical experience of being a unit of consciousness afloat in the sea of consciousness. The reason I am bringing it up is this. Adrian said he realized from that experience, what he took away from his mystical experience was that the consciousness that he found himself surrounded and embraced by and through had nothing to do with his own state of mind or his own belief system. Rather, he found himself, in this body of consciousness, and he knew there was no escaping from it. When I asked him if it felt like love, and he immediately said yes, this indicates to us that we're talking about God, that we're talking about the ground state of consciousness, which in Gnostic studies we identify as the Father, because God is love. The demiurge, by contrast, is not love. The contrast to love is not hate. The contrast to love is power. What the demiurge has is power and control. And what the demiurge always wants is ultimate control of everybody and everything. This works very well on the material level because ultimate control over particles and atoms and molecules is indeed what holds our material universe together. So, good job for the demiurge. But then the demiurge takes it a step further and attempts to place that sort of ultimate control and power on us, on we humans and the second order of powers that have come down from the eons above. And this is one of the reasons why the demiurge hates humanity so much, because we are patterned after the aeons. And that was another previous episode. You can go back and look up the episode that was called Our Aeonic Inheritance. And this explains how it is that we are patterned after the eons of the Pleroma. The demiurge has no part of that. He does not know the eons of the Pleroma. The demiurge is after the fall. The demiurge didn't come from the Pleroma. The demiurge came to be during the fall. And while I'm on the topic of the demiurge, Adrian said near the end of his episode that you need to scratch the surface to find out what these power people are actually talking about, because they are more interested in looking good and in the appearance of being good, and therefore they will say all sorts of things to convince you that they are on the side of right and righteousness. The things they say sound good, but their actions do not support these things they are saying. Do they talk the talk and walk the walk, or do they just talk the talk and then things go to hell in a handbasket? And there is a Gnostic reason for this, and it is this, that the archons and the archonic appearance is always on the surface. It's only surface deep. Whereas the eons and the knowledge of the eons is aeonic through and through. So you might say that sincerity is one of the virtues of the eons, and appearances, looking good, pulling it off, is one of the appearances of the archonic. Do you remember all the way back to the beginning of the Gnostic Insights podcasts? I talked about virtues and vices. The virtues are aeonic traits. The vices are demiurgic traits. And they are generally in opposition. So you might want to go back and review the episodes having to do with virtue and vice. You will find that talked about in the first 8 episodes at GnosticInsights.com, where under the tab called Gnostic Gospel Primer, you will find the basic concepts and philosophy of Gnosticism laid out in a very simple and easy to understand way. Another fun thing was that Adrian used broccoli as an example of fractals. And I am going to place my YouTube broccoli fractal demonstration on the episode page for this episode that you can find at GnosticInsights.com in case you're listening to this on a podcast source other than GnosticInsights.com. And again, go back to the earlier episodes of Gnostic Insights and you will find big discussions on the whole concept of fractals and why fractals are important to our Gnostic development. Because stories repeat themselves. The stories repeat themselves on a larger and smaller scale, little stories having to do with your life, bigger stories having to do with large historical level stories. They're the same story over and over and over again. And once you begin to recognize these fractal stories, you can see them at all their different levels. And finally, to complete this episode, which is part one of Adrian's interview, I wrote an article on the Simple Explanation blog in August 19th of 2018 called A Simple Explanation of Groupthink. And I just want to quote one thing out of that article, which I think is very relevant to what we've been talking about. And it's a quote I put in there from a fellow named Charles McKay, 1841. And he wrote this in a book called Extraordinary Popular Delusions and the Madness of Crowds. And this is what he said. Men, it has been well said, think in herds. It will be seen that they go mad in herds, while they only recover their senses slowly and one by one. End quote. And that is the way we all come to gnosis. It is an internal realization that each person must come to themselves. You cannot be taught gnosis. You cannot be coerced into having gnosis. You can't read, and say you are Gnostic. You need to go inside. You need to go within and put your own self in communication with the fullness of God, with the Son, and with the Father above. And this is the way we remember the gnosis we were born with. So, until next time, I'll see you again very soon, and we will be delighted to have Adrian as our guest for part two of this interview. Onward and upward. God bless.